Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, December 8, 2021. The head of the UN mission in South Sudan says the 2018 peace agreement is at risk.
The pace of implementation remains too slow, a fact that was acknowledged even by the president at the governor's conference.
And fishermen in Jonglei State fight over territorial waters.
One of the section, Langakwe, was killed by the people called Anyar and the Nanakoka Anyar.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The head of the UN mission in South Sudan warns that the viability of South Sudan's peace deal is at risk because the parties that signed it more than 3 years ago have done very little implementing the key parts of the deal. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Speaking to reporters at a United Nations base in Juba today, Nicholas Haysom, the special representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan, said the party leaders implementing the deal are not living up to their words and have yet to show they have the political will to effectively implement the agreement in order to change the socio-economic and political situation across the country.
The pace of implementation remains too slow, a fact that was acknowledged even by the president at the governor's conference. If this continues, there is a risk that the viability of the broader agreement will come under threat, which is a concern raised by analysts and commentators recently. Put simply, there cannot be a business-as-usual approach. The parties must inject fresh urgency into the process and demonstrate a sustained collective political will to finalise critical areas of the agreement.
One of those critical areas, says Haysom, is Chapter 2, which covers security arrangements and the timeline for graduating the country's unified forces. In July, President Salva Kiir vowed that the first batch of 53,000 unified forces would graduate from training camps around the country, but that promise failed to materialize after the parties could not reach a consensus on a unified military command structure. In mid-October, the Joint Defense Board, the body tasked with overseeing the training and graduation of unified forces, said the forces would graduate in the first week of November, but the National Transitional Committee has yet to put in place the logistics needed to facilitate the screening process. Haysom says the unity government should also pass laws that promote financial and judicial reforms as well as constitution making so that elections can be held. Last week, President Kiir told a governor's forum in Juba that one of the many challenges delaying the graduation of the unified forces is the impact of the UN arms embargo on South Sudan. The president says the government does not have weapons for the forces who are ready to graduate because the ongoing arms embargo restricts Juba from buying arms. Haysom says the graduation of forces does not require arms.
You know, I mean, it's possible for the graduation to take many forms, and I wouldn't want to prescribe to those like the Joint Defence Board how it should take place. But there's no necessary condition that the graduands have rifles in their hands when they graduate. Obviously, one would want at the end of the day to see that the security apparatus is properly armed. But for the purposes of graduation, which is a procedural measure so that we can go ahead and integrate the forces, that I think can go ahead.
After his recent trip to Bentiu and other parts of South Sudan where he interacted with many locals, Haysom says it's clear that many South Sudanese are not satisfied with the efforts made by the parties toward implementing the peace deal.
We would recognize that there seems to be expressions of frustration at people who are promised continuously that there will be progress in the implementation of Chapter 2. but we don't see that progress there.
Haysom says there seems to be a shift of interest by the international community on the situation in South Sudan due to the political unrest in Sudan and Ethiopia. Ahead of his scheduled briefing to the UN Security Council next week on the situation in South Sudan, Haysom says the international community should reiterate its unwavering support for the South Sudanese people.
That while we appreciate the eyes of the world are on Ethiopia and Sudan, it would be wrong to neglect and walk away from the situation in South Sudan, not to recognize that it's an integral part of this region and needs the same level of interest and support that the other countries in the region are getting.
The September 2018 revitalized peace agreement was aimed at restoring peace and stability across South Sudan. 3 years later, only one of the deal's 8 chapters has been partially implemented. Haysom says, aside from problems with carrying out the peace deal, there are growing threats caused by devastating floods this year. He noted that 800,000 people have been severely affected by the worst floods in 60 years in South Sudan, particularly in Jonglei, Unity, and Upper Nile states.
I can only describe the situation as dire. Floodwaters are not receding as expected with the change in season, and hundreds of thousands of people remain displaced and in desperate need of aid.
Haysom says the consequences of this year's floods can be disastrous in terms of food insecurity, lack of health care, education, and the risk of waterborne diseases. 8 partners said that they cannot bridge the gap in funding and resources to reach all those affected by the floods who need assistance. Repeated efforts to reach representatives of various parties in the unity government for reaction to Haysom's remarks were unsuccessful. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Sudanese military leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan says the military is committed to ensure a smooth transitional period in the country until national elections are held. General Burhan warned people he referred as enemies of Sudan against any interference with the country's national security. He said at least 16 members of the Sudan armed forces were killed during a fight with Ethiopia over the past few days. Michael Atit has this story for VOA from Khartoum.
Addressing hundreds of Sudanese army trainees on Wednesday in the River Nile state, General al-Burhan defended his decision in late October to suspend the transitional government and articles of the constitutional declaration on which Sudan's transitional government was established. Al-Burhan says he took the action to prevent the collapse of law and order in the country. He says Sudanese armed forces have a constitutional duty to defend the country against any internal or external forces.
The Sudanese armed forces shall continue to defend and protect the change in this country, the change that our youth have sacrificed their lives for through the December Revolution. We don't care what the people say, but we want to assure the Sudanese people that we are on the right path of the revolution and change, which we have promised and we are committed to fulfill.
On October 25th, al-Burhan suspended the cabinet and detained Sudanese Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok, along with government ministers and other political party leaders. He accused them of playing a negative role in what should have been a smooth transition of government in Sudan. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok was reinstated to his position after reaching a political agreement on November 21st with country's military leaders, which allowed for the release of all political detainees. Thousands of Sudanese citizens criticized the deal and continue protesting against the military takeover. The deal gives Hamdok a mandate to lead a civilian government of technocrats during a transitional period until July 2023, to be followed by a national election. Al-Burhan insists the army remains committed to achieving a full democratic transition in Sudan.
We are committed to fully implement this agreement and support the transitional government until a free and credible election is held in this country. We have specific duties that are enshrined in the constitution, and we are committed together with the Prime Minister to fulfill these duties.
Al-Burhan says at least 16 members of Sudan's armed forces lost their lives over the past 2 weeks in Al-Fashaga of eastern Sudan during a battle with Ethiopian army forces and their allied militia. Al-Burhan accused some foreign diplomatic missions in Sudan of playing a negative role in fueling conflict and causing instability, but did not mention specific countries.
We are warning against these moves and we are aware of what is going on in our country. It is not difficult to take any legal procedure against anybody that is trying to interfere with Sudan's national security.
Some regional analysts say the agreement signed between Al-Burhan and Hamdok was reached after continued pressure from Western countries who had condemned the military takeover and promptly suspended their economic assistance to the government of Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Authorities in Jonglei State say one person was killed during clashes between two groups of young men over the rights to fishing waters on the River Nile. The Jonglei State Police Commissioner says police have detained at least two suspects and three local chiefs in the area have surrendered themselves to the police. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Jonglei State Police Commissioner Major General Joseph Mayana Kon says the fighting between the two groups of young men erupted late last night in Nyang, a fishing island located about 20 kilometers north of the state capital Bor.
I was just called at midnight that there is an incident happened in a place called Nyang. I think it is in one of the islands in Toi. In which one of the section called Angakwe was killed by the people called Anyar and the dead body, I think it is buried where the death occurred.
Upon receiving the call, General Akon says he immediately dispatched officers to the area to quell the clashes. Akon says the police apprehended five people, including three chiefs, who turned themselves in.
The police has run up the suspects, and they have been borrowed now. They are now under the police custody. The chief from Anyer have come. Now they have surrendered themselves to the police.
Bor County Commissioner Yuot Alirwok condemned the violence and called the fighting unfortunate. Commissioner Hawk says he has directed local government leaders in Bor County, including Fayam administrators, chiefs and elders, to hedge calm among young people in their communities.
All things that happen, they are not new to the life of human being. Various mistakes happen at various times, and they differ in the level of the measurement. There are high level of crime, such as the one we are facing today, and there is also rules set in place that deal with a situation like this. So I'm telling the young people that don't let emotion mislead you. I'm discouraging any individual move or any move designed or actually pursued by a group of people in seeking revenge or in attacking anybody.
Oak Hedge local residents to be patient and let the authorities do their work. Several disputes over fishing rights have occurred in Jonglei State over the past few years. In July 2018, thousands of people were displaced from Thony fishing village in Bor counties by Dit Payam after local chiefs and some residents from Makol Chwey forced residents to vacate their homes, claiming they were fishing illegally in and around the area. In March 2019, several people were reportedly killed when a group of people from a community in Jonglei State, Tuch East County, clashed with members of another community from Irul County of Lake State over fishing rights on the River Nile in an area called Chwet Akwet, which is also known as Liet Boy. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, the World Health Organization says malaria is killing more people. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The World Health Organization reports a significant rise in malaria cases and deaths in 2020 due to COVID-19 disruptions in malaria services. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva on World Health Organization's latest World Malaria Report.
Over the past two decades, global malaria death rates have been cut in half, saving the lives of 10.6 million people. New data gathered by the WHO show COVID-19 has stopped and even reversed the progress made in reducing deaths from this preventable, treatable disease. The WHO's World Malaria Report estimates 241 million malaria cases and 627,000 malaria deaths globally have occurred in 2020. This represents an increase of 14 million cases and 69,000 deaths compared to the previous year. WHO links the increase to disruptions of malaria prevention, diagnosis, and treatment services during the pandemic. Director of WHO's Global Malaria Program, Pedro Alonso, says the situation could have been far worse. The good news, he says, is that the predicted doomsday scenario did not transpire. He notes gloomy projections made in March 2020 of a huge spike in malaria have not materialized.
One worst-case scenario implied a doubling of malaria deaths. So, let me reiterate this. That is not the case. We can call this a success story, even though an extra 47,000 people have died as a consequence of the disruptions.
The report finds progress in the global fight against malaria remains uneven. Between 2000 and 2020, WHO has certified 12 countries as being malaria-free. Two countries, China and El Salvador, have achieved this status in 2021 despite the ongoing pandemic. Since 2015, both cases and deaths have stalled in most of the world's 93 endemic countries and territories. However, other figures show malaria cases have increased in 32 countries, most in sub-Saharan Africa and some in South America. Alonso says the situation remains especially precarious in Africa, where the malaria burden remains unacceptably high. He notes Africa accounts for about 96% of global deaths, 80% among children under age 5.
And at the same time, the pandemic is not over and the pace of economic recovery is uncertain. Without immediate and accelerated action, key 2030 targets of the WHO Global Technical Strategy will be missed and additional ground may be lost.
WHO strategy calls for a 90% reduction in malaria cases and deaths by 2030. It also presses for the elimination of malaria in at least 35 countries and for the prevention of disease resurgence in all countries that are malaria-free. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on health matters, more South African companies and institutions are making COVID-19 vaccination mandatory as another wave of infection driven by the Omicron variant hits the country. To help ease vaccination hesitancy, South Africa's Religious Forum Against COVID-19 has been campaigning for religious followers to take the jab. For VOA News, Maurice de Klerk reports from Johannesburg.
Everything's ready for you.
This is what? Simran Brambat and Birtu Patel volunteer in Johannesburg at the BAPS Sri Swaminarayan Hindu Temple vaccination site. The volunteering team is urging the public to get a COVID-19 shot at their government-registered vaccination site. They have vaccinated about 3,000 people since September, but South Africa is seeing a fresh wave of infections driven by the Omicron variant. Volunteering congregant and pharmacist Birtu Patel helped setting up the temple's vaccine site.
We wanted to create a site that was comfortable, that people could move around in and get their vaccine quickly. VAPS Charities has done a little bit of outreach work. They are already volunteers of various backgrounds and professions.
South Africa is the worst hit by the pandemic on the continent, with over 3 million confirmed cases and nearly 90,000 deaths. The Omicron variant has many years concerned that those numbers could quickly rise with a fresh wave of infections. The Religious Forum Against COVID-19 has brought various faiths together to pool resources and better address vaccine hesitancy amongst religious believers, says spokesperson Mulana Ibrahim Bam.
There is a parallel movement, so to speak, about people creating hesitancy with regard to vaccines. So let us look at solutions rather than actually being negative towards situations.
South Africa has yet to reach its goal of vaccinating 70% of adults with at least one jab by the end of the year. So far, just 40% of adults have gotten at least one dose. Official statistics indicate youth are the least likely to get vaccinated.
Can you also place on that cotton pad for me?
Student Talen Becha came to the site at the temple because it's close to home and not crowded like others.
I feel that more people should do it because it's emptier and it doesn't really affect all.
Analysts say targeting young people should be a top priority. Religious Studies Professor of the University of Johannesburg, Maria Fromhop, explains.
If these churches and these international or this interfaith forum really wanted to be effective, it would be to find a way to target young people and encourage them to get vaccinated. And then, of course, to encourage people who have to make decisions about whether to spend 50 rand traveling to a vaccine site to get vaccinated versus feeding their families.
While the Religious Forum Against COVID-19 does not have figures on the rate of vaccination amongst religious believers yet, giving the jab at houses of worship seems to help. The BAPS Sri Swaminarayan Temple says about 90% of its congregants are already vaccinated. Marise de Klerk for VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
Still on COVID, more than 5 million people around the world have had their lives cut short by COVID-19, and the number keeps rising. The best defense against this virus is a vaccine. VOA's Carol Pearson explains one approach in making vaccine that's been effective against polio, measles, Ebola, and a host of other viruses.
People can get COVID-19 even though they've been fully vaccinated, but that doesn't mean the vaccine has failed. Those who are fully vaccinated against this virus are so far much less likely to end up in a hospital or on a ventilator. Dr. Andrea Cox with Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine has a special interest in immunology.
The goal of vaccination is to reduce the severity of disease in almost all vaccines in use and not to prevent infection entirely.
The oldest method to make a vaccine uses either a live virus that is too weak to reproduce. Scientists call it a live attenuated virus, or a dead virus that, because it is dead, can't reproduce, but can still cause an immune response. Polio vaccines have used both dead and weakened live polioviruses with great success. Many countries are now polio-free. In 2021, only 2 children in the entire world contracted the wild poliovirus. 3 COVID-19 vaccines use weakened adenoviruses, benign viruses that cause colds, as their vectors. Vectors are simply delivery systems used to introduce a more dangerous virus, either a weakened live virus or a dead one, or a portion of that virus. The Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine uses a weakened chimpanzee adenovirus that does not infect humans. Sputnik V and the Johnson & Johnson vaccines use weakened human adenoviruses. With all three vaccines, scientists remove a gene from the coronavirus's spike protein and put it into the adenoviruses. Once injected, the viruses enter the cells and start to produce the spike protein. Then the body mounts an attack. Remember, the spike protein is only a part of the coronavirus and doesn't cause COVID-19, so there's no danger of getting the illness from the vaccine. Again, Dr. Cox.
You don't just mount an immune response to the adenovirus, but you also mount the immune response to the protein that it encodes, that spike protein that is part of the virus causing COVID.
The World Health Organization has authorized use of the AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson vaccines, but not Sputnik V. The WHO says it needs more data from the Sputnik trials. Cox says of the three vaccines that use an adenovirus, scientists favor the AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson vaccines.
We know the most about the AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson vaccines because they have been given to tens of millions, if not 100 million people worldwide. So we know the most about their side effect profiles and their immune responses. We have far less data on the Sputnik vaccine because it has just been used far less frequently, and there are simply fewer international studies that have assessed it.
While some people choose not to get a vaccine, others are willing to travel long distances to get one. Hondurans are willing to cross a river to get the vaccine in neighboring Nicaragua. The pandemic is far from over. Some scientists expect COVID to be with us for 3 to 4 years. And even with the best scientists in the world working on vaccines and treatments, doctors are concerned that as the virus continues to infect unvaccinated people and mutate, at some point, the vaccines we have now won't be able to offer full protection against COVID-19. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
That's all we prepare for you this Wednesday. We now leave you with Mawa and the song Mama.
Yeah, this song is a special dedication to all the mothers out there. As a sign of appreciation, as a sign of love. Mawa, Mwana Minga.
Mafi haja biti mwana na biwadi leita. Mafi mahangi beni. Apana bishilita mafi haja bitimu wala na biwadi leita mafi mahalgi benu apana bishilita ya mama mami ye.
Gijere nahar ubilel ashanita biligo iya haja itader shalakan haja al ana mabiyag der ashanita taban waratai minana suker itageni hani sana kanana gikore kati yana mimotoro kaman sekete itageni kore kore kanana gijere jere ashankede ana mawakau au kukisim kanana tala ayan itamagi numbilel ashambes itader arufana numke akila ana gisa to chase away my nightmares. You always manage how to put a big smile on my face. Ita ali man again ni beid mi mashake. Worila ana hajatana arufi dunya de. Mafi haja bitimu ana bidafa takide. Ana deru worileta ana kuna kuna de.
Mafi haja bitimu ala nabi wadileta. Mafi mahalgi beini kiafa nabi shilita. Ya mama mami ye.
We've been listening to Mawa and the song entitled Mama. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America.
Ida, Borila, Umataki, Galanaki, Uwita, Aja, Bidimu.